this is? Do you actually not know what this is?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I know this song. I was a hockey player. Okay. I used to jam to this in the dressing room. You know?
All right. All right. I just needed to know because, yeah, because, but do you know why they played it?
No.
Hmm.
Why did they play it? Should I
guess you were also a hockey player in the sense that you got some concussions, and so your memory
I sure did.
Like, yeah, is that because I called you the Chumbawamba of food takes? You had one hit, and then everything else was an abject failure.
Oh, I get
and
it.
Now this is why. This is why we're playing Chumbawamba. That's Vic being funny.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you get it though?
Sometimes the things go over my head, and then you guys feel like you wasted your ammo because it doesn't even affect me. You know.
I don't feel like it's a waste.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, like what are we talking about here? Like, there's someone out there who just like doesn't understand bullets. It's like, oh, that doesn't hurt. I don't know what's going on. I don't understand.
Yeah. Oh.
That one didn't affect me.
Yeah.
Let's talk to Justin Bourne, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne's on Sportsnet 590 The Fan later this afternoon. Good morning. How are we today?
I'm doing well, Ailish, and yourself?
Oh, I'm getting bullied, but that's just another day.
Yeah. You're doing a great job. I'm trying my best. Keep plowing on.
That's all you can do. Just like the Maple Leafs, trying their best yet failing. Another 4-1 comeback. How did you feel after that game? Is it all positives, like Sheldon Keefe said?
I felt happy that when it was 4-1, I placed a wager on the Avalanche.
That felt like
a prescient play. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I recognize a lot of the things that Sheldon Keefe said make a lot of sense. Like, the Colorado Avalanche are very good, and they went into their building, and they took a point, and they were down some forwards, and they hadn't been in front of fans, and we could, you know, all these things that it's pretty decent that you got a point. But, I mean, disappointing, right? I mean, you're up 3 goals in the third period, and what the Leafs were supposed to be doing this year is figuring that out. Figuring out how to be the team that could get leads, but also hold them against good teams, because that's kind of integral in the playoffs. So a little disheartening to see them get put in that situation, challenged again, and yet again we're going, boy, can the Leafs do it when it really counts?
Yeah, I think this is a two things can be true situation, where Sheldon Keefe knew that this wasn't the time to use one of those Sheldon Keefe bullets, right? This isn't where he's going to take the team aside and have a meeting and say, what the hell was that? Like, they were playing in a tough game against a really tough team. They were missing some key pieces. And, yeah, they blew a lead. I don't think that is the time for him to kind of just crap all over them. So he goes positive. But you and Fuda both said the same thing, which is true. Which is like, yeah, this is supposed to be different. This is the year where they're supposed to be more clamped down. And, yeah, is it probably a little overstated, the Leafs blowing the 4-1 lead thing? But, yeah, I still want to be able to see you play with a little – like, win more puck battles. Be a little bit tougher. Have a little bit more of an edge. Have a little bit more of a pushback. Mm-hmm. And I thought the real moment in the game that scared the crap out of me was that power play, which, they end up scoring on. But just the way that Colorado sort of just took the puck from them and said, this is ours now, and we're going to kind of tilt the ice in this game. Like, that was a weird one where you scored on a power play, and yet the momentum of the game felt like it shifted to the other team.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's this – weird dynamic with the Toronto Maple Leafs where I think in the early days of Kyle Dubas, the idea was you don't have to defend if you play in the other end. You know, we're going to be so good offensively that we'll play in the other end. And so, yeah, we'll just get up 4-1, 5-1, and we'll keep pushing, and defense won't be all that important. It's like, no, that doesn't really work in hockey. You know, like at least 40% of the time, you're going to end up in your own zone. So that didn't work. And then I think they tried to flip the switch, be this defensive team, and just, all right, we're going to focus on this and clamp it down. And that's not great either, right? You get kind of shell-shocked. And so right now they seem to be trying to figure out how are they going to be the team when they're up 4-1 in these tight games. Are they going to continue to press? Are they going to continue to try to score goals? Are they going to continue to lock it down? Like, it's obviously got to be somewhere in the middle, the Goldilocks theory of defense here, where they just can't seem to find this happy medium of how much to press, how much to sit back and clamp it down. Maybe that's a personnel thing. Maybe that's going to be the battle for them from here to the end of the season.
One of the things I liked best about I guess the game, even though how it ended, was Matthews, Kerfoot, and Bunting. That line came out pretty fast, generated a lot of offense. And Kerfoot himself has been kind of like earning his contract. We talked about how he's kind of he was quiet at the beginning of the year. Now he's earning that. He leads all Leafs with a plus 19 rating. What are you liking most about what he's done quietly over the last couple months?
You know, I think he's he's not soft on the puck for a small guy. Like, he's able to win pucks back, and it all comes down to his skating with Kerfoot. Like, and he's really flying around out there. He can make a difference, and you know, and I mean that not just offensively, but in terms of getting the puck back and getting into puck battles and, you know, having an effect on the play. I think in the past there were stretches of games where you just he didn't come up. He wasn't relevant. Like, he didn't do anything good or bad. He just sort of existed out there. You know, to earn the salary he earns with the opportunity he has, you'd like to see him make some plays. And I do feel like he's finding ways to be impactful, to keep his team on offense, and then to use that skating to create, you know, once they do have it. So, yeah, he's found something for sure. And what's encouraging is I think we saw him in playoffs last year as one of the Leafs' best players. So it's not something that I feel like he's just a regular season guy. I kind of do think this is a player who's found something and can be a help for them, a positive difference maker.
I feel bad for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyways. Kerfoot has been awesome. Really. He has.
You feel bad about that?
No. Hold on. He's
There's
been good.
A but, I'm sure.
Yes. He's been good, and he's been a top six guy, and it's clear that he's you know, he can play next to good players, and yes, there has been more bite to his game this year, and it was probably a tough trade for him that took a little bit more. Like, some guys, it takes longer to settle in, but also he can't live up to the contract. Like, he just can't, because he got paid to be a centerman, and that's not what he is. And I'm sorry, as good as he is playing, and he deserves a lot of credit. He does. So it's like, this is why I feel bad about saying this. I don't want to pay my wingers that play with John Tavares and Austin Matthews and those other guys that he gets to play with $3.5 million. And so you just kind of look at it and I say, yeah, he's living close to the contract, right? It's not an issue what he's doing right now. He's not a problem for you right now. Certainly not. He's a positive to your team, but when it comes to just still like the fit with the roster, you get into this offseason and somebody's willing to take Alex Kerfoot and you think you can, you know, supplement him with a different winger for cheaper, I'm down for it.
Yeah, you know, it's wild is like how, you know, how you just can't have any contract that's inefficient now, like at all. So, you know, we look at every deal and go, okay, is he worth the contract? He is not good enough. You know, we need people who are outperforming their contracts for, you know, for all the guys who aren't Matthews, Marner, Tavares, and Nylander. Like, almost literally everyone has to be outperforming their numbers. So he is a guy who's going to remain in the crosshairs for that. You know, Nick Ritchie took some heat off him this year, being the guy making a little bit more, maybe just a couple dollars more than he deserves. So, regardless, though, yeah, I don't disagree that Kerfoot is a guy who, when you're looking to make an upgrade, you go, I don't know if that's the best use of that money.
So you mentioned Nick Ritchie, and we had talked a little bit about him earlier in the show, just in terms of seeing him. And I mean, he scored, but let's just erase that from your mind. Did it kind of expose more of a weakness on the depth of the Leafs up front? When you look at the trade deadline upcoming, we used to talk about them needing a defenseman really bad. But is it more of them needing, you know, a depth forward this time around when you see a Cini and a Clifford needing to be played?
You know, I don't know about that. Like, I like Clifford. I think Clifford's a useful piece, and I'm happy when he's in the lineup. I got no issue there. You know, I also think that Ritchie has – it's possible that Ritchie is going to have done them the favor of being bad enough that they can waive this guy and no one's going to pick him up. And then after the trade deadline, when there's no salary cap, he can be called back up and be a part of it. Because it's not that you don't want Nick Ritchie around or available or as a depth guy. It's that you don't want to be paying him $5 million over 2 years and putting him on in your top six on left wing. So, you know, if he can still hang around for this team, I'm fine with that. I'm okay with him as a depth guy, depth option for them who can do something else, because whatever you pick up for league minimum is not going to be better than Ritchie. But, you know, we've all been mad about the contract, I think, more than anything. So, you know, again, Ritchie doing them a bit of a favor. But to your question, I do think that they still need a little bit of help there. How they go about finding a left winger without moving money around or moving players, I don't know. But, yeah, it's not as much of a problem to me as the D.
Yeah. So to me, it's one of those – there's a higher ceiling play to be made with the blue line, but there's a lower floor play to be made with the forwards. Like, it to me, it's just – it's a harder trade to make for the defenseman. There's not what you need that's just readily available out there. So if you can get that deal done, like I guess if the question is presented to me as, hey, you can have one of these two things, a really good right shot defenseman who you can rely on and who can kill penalties, or a depth forward, that the answer is obvious. It's just that if I'm Kyle Dubas over the next 2 months, I really do think that it should be easy for him to go out and find someone who has a little bit of value, who is on the cheap, and who can sort of act as a bit of a buffer between Sini and Josh Hosang and the rest of the Kyle Clifford. Like, boy, I have been a what's the gap between Richie and Kyle Clifford guy. And watching Kyle Clifford in that game against Colorado, and listen, both were bad. Nick Ritchie cost him the game with that penalty. Like, he was not good either, even though he did score. But yeah, Kyle Clifford in that game, I was like, boy, buddy, that was, you were out of your depth. I'm sorry. He's looking at that when he was on the ice and they were getting the shifts against McKinnon, ends up jumping over the boards. I was like, pray for Cliffy. No one liked to see that. Ailish's hometown boy.
This is what we mean when we talk about, like, replacement player. Like, that's not a – I mean, it is a theoretical thing, but also it's not a theoretical thing. It's like, who are you calling up from the AHL on short notice when you need an extra body? And it's a Kyle Clifford. Like, that's – and that's – you know, with Richie, it's like, no, he's not worth 2.5. But to your point earlier, Justin, is like, okay, but who's readily available for 750K? Right. Or that's already in the system, and it's, you know, it gets dicier when you look at it that way.
Yeah, you look at any lineup and you go, who's their 13th forward? Put them on the ice against McKinnon. You know, it's like, all right, well, you know, is ours better than theirs? You're comparing it against that guy, not against Nathan McKinnon. So, JD, the D question then, are you okay with doing throwing Sandin in a package for Chychrun? You know, so it sounds like it'd be a first and Sandin and something else, you know, whether that's Robertson or Amarov or something like that. Would that impress you more than a winger ad?
Well, first of all, my understanding of where Amarov is at, who people have given me lots of crap over in terms of me being like, oh, yeah, okay, they got the slight guy from Russia. Like, when they drafted him, I saw all these, like, draft nicks. This is my favorite thing about hockey Twitter, is, like, the people who pretend as though they're watching Russian prospects on the regular, who I see, you know, tweeting every night about the NHL, which is amazing. Like, the cognitive dissonance of these
things. They have 40 hours in their days, I guess.
They live a different life. Like, they're taking a pill that allows them not to sleep. Who knows what it is? But yes, that's cognitive dissonance at its finest.
Those exist.
But my understanding of Rodion is that the stock is quite down. The stock is down. So I don't know what the value is. I don't know if you end up shipping a guy like that when the value is lower and throwing into a package. I'll be honest, Bourne, I don't watch Arizona Coyotes games.
Yeah,
like,
fair.
I don't ever tune in to see them. So, like, I've heard of, like, I've seen the player before. I've followed him since he was drafted, obviously. But it's not someone that I'm watching night in, night out to the point where I go, God, I really want that player. I really want that piece. And so when I hear about it sort of on the surface, I'm reluctant to do it because I know what the Leafs have in Sandin, and I don't know what the return would be in Chychrun. So that's kind of my lame answer. I don't even know if I'm doing the job properly in answering it.
Honestly, though, like, I just... Chychrun is a talented guy and a right shot guy and a top four guy. He's a good player.
Sure.
You know, I do wonder about buying damaged goods. Like, Chychrun right now, the last time I checked, the second worst plus minus in the NHL was minus 17. It's like Keith Yandel. Chychrun's minus 30.
You know, goodness.
He's like so he's just been getting his tail side handed to him over and over every single night. I don't know how that feels to suddenly plug him into games and be like, win the Stanley Cup. But I know he's a great, talented player. It's just coming from a tough spot.
That matters to me. That always matters to me. To me, it's like you're better off in deals like that. And I'm sure there are examples, tons of examples that I wasn't really thinking along these lines before the segment, but I would have done it differently. But I'm sure there are lots of examples of superstar player or high-level talent who was on a crappy team and then someone else went and got him good and then they ended up being a winner, right? Maybe you could even, to a lesser extent, make this case for Kessel when he was a Leaf, where people went like, mm-hmm. hey, this team is terrible, and are we sure that this guy can win? And then he goes to the Penguins, and then when they win in 2016, he was their second best player, right?
How about Jay Bouwmeester going to win a cup in St. Louis, never makes the playoffs and goes to
win
a cup?
Jay Bouwmeester, I feel like I got to see him with Team Canada. Like, I don't know. Whoever thought Jay Bouwmeester might be a bit fraudulent in his situation. I don't know. Maybe it was because he was like one of the consummate league nice guys, but I never heard a bad thing about Jay Bouwmeester ever really in his career. So I don't know. But to me, it's like those are places where you want to buy low on a guy like Bunting, where you go grab Bunting and he comes out of there and you say, hey, what if we put this guy here and it ends up working out? Rather than it is like mortgaging a ton of assets to do that. Mm. What I would say though with the Leafs is like, and we were talking about this earlier, is it's far more urgent than we have really discussed this year. Like, this is the gift and the curse of these players who have come in here and provided so much excess value on their contracts, is that none of them are long-term deals. Like, if you think about where the Leafs are getting this surplus value, it's Jack Campbell, right? Just an incredible amount of surplus value. The price of the brick is going up there massively. It's Andre Kasha, Blake's favorite Maple Leaf who ever lived. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year, and he's making, what, $1 million? Like 1.25, something along those lines? He's going to be a 3+.
But anyway. Yep.
Yeah, either way, that guy's getting paid more than what he's making this year. Probably he's going to double his salary. Mikheyev, who has come back and immediately provided surplus value, he's going to be up. You're going to have to find a deal for him. Like, this team is already so incredibly capped out that trying to find those things between the margins, it's only going to get tougher, especially given the way that the pandemic continues to hit this league. Like, if you find a trade, where I'm going with this is, if you find a trade where Sandin does have to go, but you find a way to make it work cap-wise and your team is better for the next 2 years, I'm doing it. I'm doing that kind of a trade.
It's just so hard. You're right, though, because, you know, you need young players who aren't making much yep. money on, like, entry levels right now to make yep. it all work. And that's where you get a ton of value. It is. It's dicey. And plus, I don't know. I'm not sure what Sandin's going to be. I watch him play. I think he's so good. Like, I really think that guy is he's a player. He is a player. So I have legitimate worry about trading him and then seeing him become something that's like, I'm not super comfortable with trading him away. So it is. It's a tough situation. I'm with you. Nobody's untradeable to me, but I do have concern because I think he's so talented.
So I have a little bit of concern further up. Like, we're talking about upgrading the third pair or depth forward or whatever. I have a little bit of residual concern about Jake Muzzin. And I know he got off to a poor start to the season, then he kind of rounded into form. But he did need some extra time off when they were coming back from that little pause in action. And it looked to me, at least, like Colorado was targeting his side of the ice a little bit more on zone entries on Saturday. Where are you at with Muzzin in terms of, you know, hey, is he the guy he looked like for 20 games there, or is he closer to the Jake Muzzin that we were a little worried about at the start of the season?
Yeah, you know, I'm terrified for the Leafs about the Muzzin situation, because if he isn't the good Muzzin, the guy who like turned his pair into a reliable shutdown pair by himself, then I don't think the Leafs can win the Stanley Cup. No big deal. They need him to be good, and I do have concern about the way he's been injured in the past with non-contact injuries, about his age, about the, you know, playoff races he's endured and the way he's played. So yeah, I have concern that there is a decline here that's legitimate and not just sort of a blip. And that's just one of those things, though, that I don't think you can do something about. You know, unless you're talking about load management, which in that case, you got to get yourself in a good playoff position down the stretch to be able to do that. I don't know that there's anything you can do aside from cross your fingers and go, man, I hope it's a random dip like all players have and not decline.
Yeah. Given his injury history, too, and his inability to stay healthy in those spots, it's one of the biggest trouble areas for the Toronto Maple Leafs. There's just no doubt about it. It's undeniable at this point. And obviously in salary cap eras, you don't end up with perfect teams. But this leads me back to that discussion that we had about Sandin, and sort of what I feel like maybe I learned, if anything, from that Colorado game is the Leafs, this window is getting shorter and smaller. It's shrinking. It's becoming a shorter time frame. The window is getting smaller and smaller, and it feels like when you're watching a TV show where they're trying to run, you know, they're trying to escape the Temple of Doom, or they're trying to run through the portal that's closing to the world they need to get back to. It's like, hey, you got to get this done. You got to get this done pretty soon. And that from the Colorado game, it was as much as we're all focused on the first round thing, because of course it matters. You got to win one round to win a Stanley Cup. And the one round thing has become beyond an embarrassment, and especially after the Montreal thing. But the goal is to win the Stanley Cup. And that's a team that you could have ended up facing there. And after that game was done and it was all over, I couldn't help but sit there and be a little bit reminded that that is what the goal of the season is, right? Mm-hmm. When we talk about the Leafs have to prove it in the playoffs, we've sort of shifted this goal to, well, the prove it in the playoffs means win round one. It's not supposed to be that way. It's only that way because it's been such an abject disaster. But really, this is supposed to be a Stanley Cup contender. I think they are a Stanley Cup contender, and we're going to start looking at it more and more through that lens.
What's really funny is the standards and expectations in the regular season for them have changed and the postseason have changed. Mm-hmm. And like the regular season, it doesn't seem to matter how good this team is. People don't care. They're like a 7-18 winning percentage, like Kings fourth best in the NHL. Yep. They've been awesome and people are like, great. Don't care. Do it in playoffs. But you're right. When they say do it in playoffs, it used to mean, you know, go on a run. Let's see what happens. Win a Stanley Cup. Now do it in playoffs literally means win a round. That is like the where the bar is in postseason. So expectations in both have shifted in ways that probably work in the Leafs' favor once they do get to the games that matter.
I'm preemptively embarrassed for how happy I and others are going to be that follow this team for when they win the cup or when they win the first round and treat it like it's a cup. It's gonna be. I'm preemptively already have the embarrassment.
You gotta start somewhere. There,
yeah, you do. You have to start somewhere. But the amount of just I already know I'm gonna have friends who cry. It's the truth. It's the truth. And some of you listening to this right now are like, I'm not gonna cry. It's like, yeah, you might though. You know, yeah,
you're probably gonna feel
call
it.
Yeah, you're probably gonna call a parent. You're gonna call some friends. There's been a lot of trauma here, and just getting out of round one is gonna release a lot of that. So before you go, quick one for you, Matthews. He has been playing so well, and you and I have had discussions about stuff like this where it's hard to evaluate the best players in the games at times, especially when there is just regular excellence. But what I want to ask you is, do you think that this is the same Matthews that we've been seeing, or that he actually has made progress this year, that there has been a step in his play?
Well, last game, maybe I'm biased because last game was ridiculous.
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah. You know what I see when he looks like that? So I was thinking the other night, I would love to see a stat on strides taken in the offensive zone. Like, generally in the offensive zone, everyone sort of cycles around. You mill about, you coast, you just sort of circle around. You look at Nathan MacKinnon, I bet you he would lead the NHL, like Connor McDavid included. He is pumping his legs. He is driving with that puck through, you know, even in the offensive zone. Matthews looked like that on Saturday night to me. Like, he was swirling around, cutting to the inside, like making people chase him, making defense tiring. Like, that's different to me, where I haven't seen him look as mobile, as light, as agile as he looks at his size. So I'm hoping that's the stride he's taken. I know in postseason games, that's not what he's looked like. So, you know, I'm not going to jump the gun and say he can do that in the playoffs, but that version of Matthews is the one you want to see come April this year.
Well, let's not hold our breath, but let's be cautiously optimistic, which is my whole job on this show.
Someone's got to do it.
Someone's got to do it. Thanks for joining us this morning, Justin Bourne, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne. You can listen to that later this afternoon at 3 to 5 p.m.
Thanks for having me,
team.
Talk
to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye. See you, buddy.
Ooh, dramatic couple of minutes outside of this show while we were talking Bourne.
Seeing that.
Vikings fire their head coach and their GM. Bears fired their head coach. All that happened in the last half hour. Oh, it's a good thing we have Mark Ross, NFL Network analyst and former
front
office
exec. It's like they waited. They did it on purpose for our next guest.
let's be honest, though. Those guys were fired in – Matt Nagy was fired in week one, and Mike Zimmer was fired probably around, like, week 11 this year. Like,
yeah.
Both those guys are the most dead man walking. That, like, the actual news would have been Bears keep Matt Nagy. Bears keep Mike Zimmer. Like, these are – it's like, yeah, both of you guys were horrific, and you've been horrific for a while. What are we talking about here? You're the most – Who was more?
I'm trying to sell a guest here.
Oh yeah,
I'm trying to sell a guest here on the next segment.
Hey, Mark Ross sells himself. All right, that guy's a former executive. And I do want to quickly. Maybe we'll end up doing more of this on Tuesday, the Cooper Kupp thing and the MVP stuff. But I feel like we've overlooked that a little bit again today. But either way, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean Cooper Kupp statistically probably the second best wide receiver season of all time this year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I will say, I'm a little. I got a little annoyed on Sunday with how many they broke the record. They got this extra game, and all these guys are breaking records, and everyone's talking about it as though it's the world's greatest accomplishment. And I go, okay, like, kind of. They kind of broke the record, kind of. They set a new record. I don't know what they did, but the way that we had conversations about it was very strange. Maybe we'll ask Mark Ross about that. Former NFL executive. Current analyst for NFL Network. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Ailish Forfar, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus. Unlike two NFC head coaches still employed, can't say the same for Mike Zimmer or Matt Nagy. The Vikings and Bears, respectively, let their coaches go as we kind of expected, but it's always nice to have that confirmed and not those poor Bear fans that would have had to wait for this to drag out longer. To help us break that down and to help us break down what ended up being a very chaotic week 18 in the NFL, NFL Network analyst, former front office executive with the Giants, the Eagles, and the Bills, Mark Ross. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Great. How are you guys?
We're doing well. So, Mark, shortly before we had you come on here, the Vikings and Bears both let their head coaches go. It's been reported the Vikings also letting their GM go. Any surprise there whatsoever for you, or is this kind of exit interview day around the league and these were always on the wall?
Yeah, I thought those were definitely would be the ones that would go, and we'll see a few more. I don't know if you guys saw Brian Flores at Miami got let go. That's a surprise down there. So, you know, there'll be more that you expect, but then there'll also be a couple unexpected ones that, as always, happens.
Yeah, the Flores one was pretty shocking. I got to say, like that one, when I saw his name trending, I was like, no, it can't possibly be for that reason. What do you just like make of that one though? Because that, yeah, there had been so much progress under him this year or over his tenure, and this year they end up having a winning streak. Just a bit of an oddity.
Yeah, you know, his first 2 years there, I thought should be a coach of the year type of candidate because of what he had really had nothing to work with, and they really overachieved. Now this year they started 0-7 and then had the 7-game winning streak, but so I thought he was going to be okay, and especially in light of they got rid of him but kept the GM, Chris Greer, which is surprising. I thought if one would have went, both of them would have gone, not one or the other. So there must have been some sort of internal power struggle, which you hate to see. And, you know, I don't know if this is the right way to go about keep one and not the other. So because I think on the field, the on-the-field product of how they overachieved was better than some of the misses that they had in personnel.
Well, do you think that Flores becomes an immediate candidate in one of those other two spots that we mentioned with the vacancies? Like, I got to wonder if he just immediately shoots to the top of the pile of coaches that other programs are interested in. But let me actually rephrase this question, though. If you are Brian Flores and you got offered the Bears job or the Vikings job, which one of them would be more attractive to you?
Well, I'd have to go with the Bears job just because you have Justin Fields. You got a young quarterback that you can you know, build around, and you've got a future, and you've got players on defense, whereas the Vikings are a little bit stuck in the middle there with Kirk Cousins. They still got that $35 million that is due with Kirk, and he's kind of shown that he's not the answer for a team trying to make it to the playoffs consistently, certainly not to win the Super Bowl. So I would definitely go towards that Chicago situation. You always want to build around and go to the situation where you've got a hopeful franchise quarterback.
So in terms of teams that did make it in and you know, maybe not the quarterback solution long term, but the Rams look a little safer with Matt Stafford, maybe. But we were talking a little bit earlier that Cooper Kupp had a lot to do with that. When you look at the season Stafford had and projecting the Rams ahead in the playoffs here, how much of that Stafford success is tied up in having a guy like Kupp versus, you know, the Rams just upgrading from a bad quarterback situation to a decent quarterback situation?
Yeah, I think what Stafford has shown, and he turned the ball over twice yesterday as well, so he's kind of looked like the Matt Stafford that was in Detroit. Very inconsistent, a lot of turnovers, and, you know, when they signed him, it was as if his game was going to get elevated to being the stratosphere with the Aaron Rodgers of the world, and he's just really been himself. And as you mentioned, you know, Cooper Kupp has been unbelievable. And when you have a player that can just bail you out of a lot of things, a receiver that does that, it makes you look better. It makes that quarterback better. And that's when you talk about having players around you. You know, a 5-yard throw to a regular guy is nothing. A 5-yard throw to Cooper Kupp, he can take that to 20. You know, if you double team Cooper Kupp, he can still find a way to get open and make things happen for you. So that's the effect that a superstar receiver has on a quarterback, on an offense, and that you can, hey, they can just go make things happen. You can't really stop or defend them because they kind of dictate everything that goes on. And that's been the bailout guy for Stafford. He could, you know, couldn't do it yesterday, but you know, bad throw there at the end of Odell. But yes, Cooper Kupp kind of changes the narrative of the whole offense.
Yeah, he does. We really got the full Stafford experience yesterday with the interception, the big play down to Cooper Kupp, then thinking he was injured for a little while. I was like, wow, this is going to become how Ben Roethlisberger was always in the boot by that one year of the season. I feel like that Matthew Stafford game is going to become almost the new quarterback cliche once Ben leaves this league. So we had one of the most exhilarating finishes to a football game I can ever remember. Like, that Chargers drive is going to go down amongst the lore of fans. It's one of those ones where you can't even over-exaggerate it. You cannot over-exaggerate how special that moment was. The throw, the 3 fourth down conversions, the 1 third down conversion, doing it at the gun, just an incredible, incredible comeback. How did you feel about the discussion around Brandon Staley, though, the potential overthink with the timeout? To you, was that an overstated or understated or properly stated narrative in that game?
Yeah, first of all, I usually just watch games just as a professional. But yes, that game last night, I was actually actively cheering. It was just incredible, the stuff that was happening in that game where I was just like, wow, you just couldn't believe it. You know, it seemed just like a storybook deal there. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Staley thing is when the other team is saying, hey, that changed our game plan, and David Carr came out and said that afterwards, that, yeah, we changed what we were going to do because they called that timeout. So that's how you really have to look at it, in that, you know, that game could have went to a tie and they could have been in. But, you know, they're just, you know, I haven't seen his reasoning today about what happened there, but it just really wasn't any reason for that to happen and do that. And that gave the Raiders the opportunity to win the game, and it happened. So, and when you're looking at it in that light, yeah, it was a mistake.
So it was a bit of a moment for – it was actually a moment for both quarterbacks. Like, that's the biggest win of Derek Carr's career. And yet, even though it was a loss, that was the biggest moment of Justin Herbert's career. This is a bit of a broader one, but if you're starting off your franchise right now and I give you the pick of three quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Justin Herbert, and Joe Burrow, which one do you take?
Man, I go Burrow. I mean, you saw what Herbert could do last night, but it's just a slight edge. But that, either way, I mean, both of those teams are hopefully set up. I mean, you can see how special Justin Herbert is, of Burrow as well, just the tear that he's been on, and that's the stuff he was doing his senior year at LSU, which won him all the awards and broke all the records and stuff. So I think both of those teams are well-positioned, and both of those quarterbacks are going to be battling out at who's the best for a while. So that's hard to say. Josh Allen is in kind of a different mix. You know, he's not as prolific as those guys. Just been able to just get back there and just throw it all the time. But, you know, he has a different element just as far as his running. But either way, you're winning with those guys.
Sticking with the quarterback theme, the Niners get into the playoffs. They've got Jimmy G and Trey Lance then is on the bench. And it's – it's been a very interesting season at that position for them, because there's a lot of what if around what if they hadn't traded up for Lance, or what if they'd used the pick on Mac Jones, or what if, hey, it looks like this is a pretty good roster and you're not all that far away. What if you hadn't used it on a young project quarterback at all? Do you think the Niners, given the success that they've had, despite basically not having this first round pick they traded up for contributing a ton yet, do you think they're maybe second guessing the strategy from this past offseason?
No, I think they're looking at it as we're in the playoffs. We just beat one of our rivals, and we're well positioned to try to make a run here in the playoffs. So I think that's when you're looking at decisions you make, and we're a playoff team, and we have a bright future with Trey Lance. And it all depends on Jimmy G. We know what he is. He's not an upper echelon guy, but he does enough for them that they win, and it'll all come down to these, you know, this number one starting against Dallas. Okay, what is he going to bring you? They're down 17-0 yesterday, and the guy came through for him. So if you're John Lynch, if you're Kyle Shanahan, you're looking at it like, yep, our guy did what we needed him to do, and we're still well positioned with Trey Lance. I'm surprised they haven't worked Trey in there more, especially since he actually had to start a game and earlier, like that they haven't put some packages in there for him. But that may be coming. So I don't think we've seen the last of that San Fran offense.
Yeah, I'm now thinking back as you're saying that to San Francisco's preseason, where it was like, we're going to have two quarterbacks for me, like a high school offense. And it's like, no, it didn't really turn out that way.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You know what?
Yeah.
The way that I did feel about the Niners was a little differently than you. I was more in the way that Blake set that up, where I thought one of the stories of Week 18 was two first-round picks used on quarterbacks incorrectly. Like, if you're the Niners, you wish you didn't have Trey Lance right now. You wish you had those resources sunk into something else, or that you would have potentially picked a different one of those quarterbacks in Mac Jones. And then the other was just, you know, Indianapolis using a first-round pick to go out and get Carson Wentz, and how woof, that was a roller coaster throughout the season, because there were moments where I went, maybe Carson Wentz is good again. He's not turning the ball over as many times, and, you know, Indianapolis is like, maybe they don't need him to be a superstar. If you have Jonathan Taylor in that offensive line, just be good. That game just sealed it, right? Is like, that's a disaster now. It's a disaster that you traded that pick. And now it's even worse, Mark, because there's still a lot of money left on that deal. They have an out after the following season. It's not going to be easy for them to find another quarterback. Can you bring back Carson Wentz after something like that? How difficult is it going to be to move off of that deal, or even bring somebody else in there to compete with him?
Yeah, I think they're stuck with Carson. And as you mentioned, you know, they traded the first round pick. The Eagles cleared all that cap space. The Eagles are in the playoffs, and the Colts, you know, the guy failed in the biggest game of his career. So that was definitely a loss. And it's not as if, you know, this was the year of we can save Carson. All his flaws are going to be forgiven, and we're going to make him better. And kind of like I talked about Kirk Cousins earlier, you know, Matthew Stafford, people hit a certain point in their career. They just are who they are. They don't change. And everybody wants them to change, and they try to do all these other things, but they don't change. They're essentially who they are as a player, and that's who Carson is. So, you know, with them stuck with his contract, and they have to bring someone in to compete. But hey, we've seen what happened before with Carson in Philly when that happened, that he even went in the tank more. But if you're really trying to save your franchise, do what's right by your franchise, you have to try to make that position better. But I think just the personal ties too there with Carson, with Frank Reich, it makes it even harder as well, because it's going to be like, you know what, we can do it with him if he stays healthy. If there'll be another year, an off season of excuse making to say we can make Carson the Carson we think he can be.
Here's what I know for a fact. T.Y. Hilton liked a tweet that Darius Butler had where it was a picture of missing Andrew Luck. I don't know how Carson Wentz shows up to the facility next year. You know, hey guys, fresh start to the new season. I'm really excited to hit the ground running. Okay, Carson, that's just tough. Mark Ross, NFL Network analyst, and again, former front office exec with the Giants, Eagles, and Bills, Super Bowl champion. Mark, thanks so much for making time for us, man. We appreciate it.
Great. Yep. My pleasure.
Take care. Mark Ross. Yeah. Oof. That is, I'm actually having trouble remembering a situation that's as awkward as the Wentz one, where like you can't, I don't know how they move off of him. Cause if you get through next year, there's an out in his contract where they carry no dead money, right? That's how you get out. 1 year later, no dead money on Carson Wentz. That looked like the earliest possible time that you could pull the cord on this. You don't have your first-round pick to use on a quarterback. You don't really have asset capital, in my opinion anyways, to move for something of real significance or consequence. Quarterbacks still cost a lot of money, even if you want sort of a middle-of-the-road one. Like, let's say they try to get into the mix for a Ryan Fitzpatrick type, right? Like, that's always the bar for that type of QB. You can't afford them. Like, what's the quarterback you go out and get? Who's the player? What are you going to do? You're going to try to get a redraft candidate in there? Like, pull Darnold from the Panthers for something? Like, I don't know where you go with this. You go the Teddy Bridgewater route? Like, try to get someone like a Teddy to compete with him? Like, I don't know what the hell you do. It's an awful, awful, awful spot for Colts fans, which compounds how terrible this is.
Yeah, and it's an awkward one, too, if you're going to bring in someone else. Because, I mean, if you have this idea that Carson Wentz is probably a lame duck quarterback, then, like, is it a real quarterback competition? Does the fact that he has a $28 million cap hit next year still, you know, outweigh the fact that he's probably not someone you're moving on with? And then I wonder, too, like, this is not how, like, this is chase betting a little bit from a front office perspective, but you did give up a first and a third for Carson Wentz, and are they willing to pull the plug after 1 year of that when they paid that level of asset costs and don't have a clear succession plan? I don't really know. I wonder if maybe there are different changes in Indy instead.
Okay. You know old JD loves his fake trades.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought of this. So this is a freshie. And I wish I had Mark Ross still on the line for this one, too. Or maybe we'll bring this one up tomorrow to an NFL guest if we can do it. What if the Eagles, and sorry, by the Eagles, I just put them in my brain because of Carson Wentz. What if the Colts traded Carson Wentz plus something? Because I actually think that they would have to throw something in here to get this done. Carson Wentz plus something for Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings, and you just both swap out your QB problems. Both guys you can get out of their deals after a year from now, right? But neither guy you can afford to just dump anywhere. Who says no? What do I need to do to sweeten the pot with the Carson Wentz thing? Like, two fresh scenarios. Do we even talk? Do we even bother? Do we even pick up the phone?
I think there's something to be said about just having a fresh start somewhere. Like, I think that there's still an opportunity for them to have some success in their careers. But sometimes you just hit a roadblock with your team or your situation you're in. So I don't really know exactly what you'd have to do to sweeten the deal on one side, but I'm all for kind of like a switch up. I mean, we just saw the Vikings fire their head coach. Maybe that's kind of a new situation to go into and have more trust and have more of an opportunity to play with a new face of your team.
I'll tell you this, though. If I was trying to become the new coach of the Vikings and I was like, hey, so we were going to get rid of Kirk Cousins, right? I don't want to do this whole thing again. I want to do the same thing. They go, oh, for sure. We're going to trade for Carson Wentz. I'd be like, I'll just spend another year in college ball and wait this sucker out before we end up coming back here. Okay, that is a poo cherry for Vikings fans.
Tough way to make a first impression, like, for sure.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think that there's just no way the Vikings would do that. Like, I think that they would be the ones who would say no, barring the Colts actually giving them a real asset. They would say no, which is nuts, because Kirk Cousins there has, like, exhausted his welcome, to say the least.
What if the Vikings become the first team to petition the league to not have any primetime games, and then they're just fine? They're like, no, I know you spread them around, everyone gets them, but we'll take Sunday 1 p.m. every week. It's fine. Yeah. Oh, no, it's fine.
That's, I have one other question for you guys. Day.
Yeah, what's up?
So I want to play that out. So Brian Flores is going to get another job again because it would appear as though there's some speculation online already that he's being let go because they want to pursue Jim Harbaugh. And there's probably going to be continued speculation that Stephen Ross, the owner of that franchise, has given a mandate to Chris Greer, their general manager, of go get me, Deshaun Watson, and let's figure this out. That is going to happen. But if you were Brian Flores and you did get offered those two jobs, like I said to Mark, which one would be more attractive to you? Because I'll just quickly say this. The case against the Bears would be that you have to attach yourself to Justin Fields, that you don't have the option of what the quarterback of the future is going to be. Like, you're probably working with that guy for at least two more seasons, three more seasons. Like, you don't get the flexibility of choosing your player at the most important position on the team.
Yeah, I still think I'd go the Bears side. I think, you know, you brought this up when we did the Hopeless Franchise Rankings last week, that even the glimmer of a potential long-term quarterback changes your outcome pretty quickly. The Deshaun Watson thing's interesting just because I thought Brian Flores was part of the draw there for Watson. So I remember reading that or that being the intel. So I'm not sure there. But yeah, I think the Bears, not only do they have Fields, but I think they're a little closer to like having a clear deck to build from, whereas the Vikings are kind of like, you know, okay, you gotta win now, and that means you gotta coach a certain way and make personnel moves a certain way. So I'd lean Bears slightly.
Yeah, just on your comment about the Dolphins maybe targeting Jim Harbaugh. The Jeff Darlington from ESPN just like tweeted out a tweet about this, saying, I see a lot of people saying this. They're assuming that it has to do with that. It's not the case. They're not targeting him. The decision to fire Flores was entirely independent. So there's like people shutting that narrative down right away, but it's definitely all over online right now.
Well, something shady is up with that, because normally players quit on teams that are, what were the Dolphins, 1-7? And then they went on that tear, and granted, they were frauds, and they beat a bunch of bad teams, and you knew it essentially all along. Like, the only legitimate win that they got was over the weird night game against the Ravens. But outside of that, it was all fraudulent wins. But either way, Flores is a good coach, and his players played hard for him, and the league had respected him. He's from the Patriots tree. Like, there's a lot to like about that guy. And I would guess that he's going to bounce back immediately and actually be head coaching somewhere, if not this upcoming season, the following one. He will be a head coach. Like, that guy's career, he's getting another shot immediately. So it's a weird one. So maybe they're not pursuing Harbaugh. Maybe that isn't the case. Maybe Darlington's report is correct. But here's what I'll say. Don't act surprised if Harbaugh ends up there. You can't be shocked if that ends up being the case. Like, you make a move like that normally to go get a splashy coaching hire, and there's no splashier name on the market right now.
I would be shocked if an NFL team and a college football coach were not being completely forthright and earnest.
Yeah, it really
what they're
would.
Leaking
really
to
would.
Media. Yeah, it'd be a shocker.
It would be quite strange.
All right. We got no Raps, no Leafs, no Monday Night Football tonight, but we do have obviously a very huge game. Raptors 905 on the board. I mean, Georgia Alabama 905 are on the board as well. Georgia Alabama, a little bit of disagreement.
Who will have bigger ratings tonight? You figure, like, it's going to be a barn burner.
Should be tight.
Yeah. I don't know. So all that's coming up. Well, we're gonna hit your texts a lot tomorrow. So make sure you're hitting us at 590 tomorrow morning. Thanks for tuning in, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It's the Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan.